Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Today on the Tampering Podcast, we're going to start off with Lakers beat writers Kyle Goon of the Southern California News Group. He is one of the few media members not only inside the bubble in Orlando, but he's going to be there the entire 3 months. Also, Bill Oram, the Athletics Lakers beat writer, good friend of mine, to break down the Lakers, their underwhelming play so far, and how they might look as we get closer to the playoffs here. On the back end, a fantastic conversation, like always, with Utah Jazz forward Joe Ingles, talking about the bubble, talking about the Jazz, the backstory about Rudy and Donovan Mitchell, and that unforgettable night on March 11th in Oklahoma City that Joe and I have talked about previously, what that night was like. But now I want to hear about the Jazz chemistry, the Jazz interpersonal dynamics, and what he is doing to stay sane. Quick teaser there, Netflix, a lot of Netflix. Enjoy. Thank you.
Welcome to Tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Tam.
To be able to bring people together.
What do you do, baby?
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was it right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
Try all you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
Everybody, we don't have to tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm just telling you what happened.
Welcome to the Tampering Podcast. I'm Sam Amick here, as always, going video style this week with two of my best friends in the business. We have the one and only William Oram, Lakers beat writer for The Athletic. Bill, how are you, friend?
Doing great, Sam. Thanks for having me back on Tampering.
Of course. Kyle Goon, Lakers beat writer for the Southern California News Group, flashing deuces. Kyle, inside the bubble, also repping for the media news group company-wide. Kyle, 3 months? You agreed to 3 months of this? How you holding up, man?
Well, recently I got in an argument with my shower for not having cold water when I wanted it. So it's going great. It's going great. There's only two more months left of this. And I'm very stable and steady.
It's gonna be great. Who gets mad at their shower for not having enough cold water?
I was just done a workout, and I don't know if you've ever been to Florida before, Bill, but
Florida
is an absolute hellscape of humidity, and it was just like I needed a cold shower. I was gonna go to work right after, and I was very, very hot, and I just had to make do with a hot shower. I let it run for like 10 minutes, and I was like, well, this is as good as it's gonna get.
I love that.
It's only a Florida problem. I realized this.
I have done my homework and made sure I read both of you and your latest and breaking down the way you see this team. They're 2-4, but beyond the record, just call it underwhelming, tinkering like crazy. Frank Vogel trying to figure out lineups. Frank Vogel talking about the reality that you're not really going to see what they are until the playoffs, and he's trying to learn as much as possible right now with no Avery Bradley, no Rajon Rondo, guys like Quinn Cook and Talen Horton Tucker all of a sudden playing roles. Kyle, I'll throw it to you first. You know, the pulse that you're taking on the group, you know, and the general question of should Lakers fans be worried? Jeannie Buss, Rob Pelinka, LeBron, all of the above. Like what's the level of concern here?
It's not a nuclear blast level of concern. Like I think when you look especially back at LeBron James teams, there's always sort of that momentary are they good enough to do this, and like at the end of the day they do have two superstars who are very good. They haven't all looked in sync for six games, and like you said, I think lineup tinkering has really played a role in some of that instability. I think also on a certain level we should believe what we see, in that some teams have shown up to the bubble and looked very good and played with a lot of urgency. I think of the Suns, the Blazers, the Toronto Raptors. And some teams just have not, and that it's not only the Lakers, but the Lakers are also, they have the last ranked offense in the bubble. They're the lowest 3-point shooting percentage team in the bubble. I think to some extent, we should believe that they're more vulnerable than they were when we last left off, when they looked incredible against the Bucks and the Clippers, and LeBron was sort of at the top of their game. And even LeBron has sort of acknowledged, look, there's a lot of things here I have to warm up to. The shooting backgrounds are different. It's weirder without fans. Right. I mean, LeBron at his heart is a performer, and he enjoys that back and forth. And I think some of these other guys do too. So I do think that we should believe what we see in terms of the instability, some of the continuity errors. But I also don't think it's like, well, the Lakers are flopping on their last legs, like they're prime for a first round upset. I definitely don't believe that yet.
Bill, you've been looking at this team all year. I think you wrote, I'm loving this video now. I love Kyle's face. You wrote that they had lost four games, I believe, in the first 28, and now all of a sudden it's 4 out of 6. What are you seeing in terms of, we have the personnel differences, but the shooting is a glaring concern. LeBron, I believe, you know, leading the squad beyond the arc is not the ideal championship formula from his history. You're supposed to be surrounding LeBron with shooters. That's not transpiring at the moment. What are the most stark differences from how you see it?
Yeah, I mean, I think Kyle hit the nail on the head just in terms of us needing to believe what you see, just because they are still going out there and they're playing LeBron James, they're playing Anthony Davis in an effort to win these games. Now, granted, they've changed the rotations up a little bit and the lineups have been inconsistent, where you've seen Talen Horton Tucker get big minutes. This is a guy who played 5 minutes all regular season before that. So, I mean, there is a lot to look at and say, this is not the Lakers at their best, at their most urgent effort. But, you know, the shooting is huge. And this was not a great three-point shooting team to begin with. You go back, by the time the season shut down, I think they were 19th. In three-point percentage, which for a LeBron James team, for a team that wasn't the top five in offense, is really low. Anthony Slater pulled some great numbers last week and found that the last 10 champions, NBA champions, have all been top 10 three-point shooting teams. The Lakers aren't even close to that. So I think, you know, if threes aren't falling, at least at a sort of decent rate, they're going to be in trouble now. And they need... to compensate for that, you need LeBron to be at, you know, huge productivity. You need AD to be hugely productive, because that's the way they've been built all year, is you get huge games from those guys and you get other guys to kind of fill in the gaps, but really it's a LeBron and AD vehicle. And whether it's because there isn't the same urgency in these seeding games that there was early in the regular season when the Lakers were trying to make a big statement and kind of announce themselves as title contenders, you know, real pedal to the metal start to the season, you haven't seen that from AD and LeBron. AD has been stifled in two of their last four matchups. Two of their last four matchups, he's just been bad. Hasn't played well through double teams. And again, I think you can excuse that away. But at some point, it's like, hey, why are two of the teams that they could potentially, that their caliber, playoff caliber opponents, figuring out the AD problem? And that makes you nervous, I think, for the postseason. A team like Portland, which can go big for big with the Lakers, if that matchup transpires. And look, the Lakers have been at the top of the West all year because they typically have the best two players in any matchup. And in any playoff matchup, they're going to have two of the three best players at minimum. But once you get down to players 4, 5, 6, 7, you know, who do the Lakers have that really scare you? And I think that that's something that, you know, most teams that they're going to face in the postseason probably have more imposing depth than the Lakers, especially if Danny Green's not shooting the ball well, if Kentavious Caldwell-Pope isn't shooting the ball well. And that puts so much pressure on LeBron and AD to carry this team all the way through the playoffs.
Kyle, because you're on the inside, you know, you've got the schematic stuff that Bill's breaking down well, then you've got the human just kind of mood, reading the room stuff that you're seeing right now. You see coaches talking in the hallways. You see the look on LeBron's face when he walks away from the press conference. Give us some of those sights and sounds. This is one of the most unique coverage experiences in the history of our industry, and I don't think that's an overstatement. And you know, you're a major part of it at the moment. But as it pertains to your team, just what are you seeing there?
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting, and some of the stuff I surely read into a little bit. You know, I think in particular, and most importantly, I think the lineup issue has been frustrating to Frank Vogel. And my read on it is that, you know, after what was the game where they got smacked? Was that against the Raptors? Yeah, after the Raptors game. You know, I sense that he really wanted to see more of continuity, but it's very tough when you have only four games left and then two of them are on a back-to-back. And then you're like, okay, well, there's nothing else to play for. Should I play LeBron and AD like in a back-to-back? Like, that doesn't really make a lot of sense. So right. And just about any, you know, big front office person would agree with that. So I think Frank definitely wanted to see more of, but he's also now at this place where he's got to protect his guys. He's got to figure out in practice how to blend guys in. I was very surprised in the last game when Deion Waiters and Markieff Morris and J.R. Smith didn't play at all. And Frank said they were trying to get familiarity. So I'm not really sure if he's been able to do what he has wanted to do as a coach and by extension, those guys as the staff to see what is this going to look like. And I think part of that is the Lakers have kind of gone into this place where they went really hard on 3-and-D guys. And now with Rajon Rondo out and Alex Caruso, who is a capable one, but not the ideal one. I mean, honestly, his best role is when he plays alongside LeBron James and is more of a secondary ball handler and a cutter and can do intelligent things off the ball. So that, I know this is kind of a hot take, but they kind of miss Rajon Rondo in that way. When in the game where LeBron and Alex Caruso were out, they didn't have a chance because no one can set the table for their offense. And really, if LeBron is off the court right now, no one sets the table at all for their offense. So as infuriating as a lot of people find Rajon Rondo, as much as the numbers don't point that he's effective, I think he's missed, frankly. I think that when guys like Danny Green and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, to a lesser extent, Quinn Cook, who had a great game the other night, when those guys don't shoot well, there's not a ton that they do. I mean, Danny can defend, and KCP can defend a little bit. He's not as good as Avery. And Quinn can't do that much except when he's hitting shots. So they're in trouble in that way and that they're limited. I've seen that translate to Frank. I do think, though, that after this Pacers game, which was competitive, LeBron seemed to be in a good mood because he had an awesome game. And that I think that it was LeBron's goal to say, I'm good. I feel like I can play at my high level again. I can get back to that March level. I can get back to my previous playoff level. And I think his goal was achieved in that Pacers game, which was pretty close, but at the end of the day, the loss didn't really mean much. So I agree with Bill that Anthony Davis kind of needs to find that consistency, but he also had a 40-point game. So I think the individuals are doing okay, but I think the frustration right now is what are those other guys able to do? And honestly, who is even going to play? Because Frank right. says, we know we have some idea of our playoff rotation, but I mean, as an observer, I'm not really sure what their playoff rotation is. I mean, I could make a guess, but there's been a lot of variation in that.
Bill, you have thoughts. I can see. Tell us.
I mean, so a few. One, the playoff rotation thing is fascinating to me. And I understand that, hey, you are 70 games into this season. You kind of know what you got. So, you know, you can ease up before the postseason. That would make sense in a normal year. But you've had 4 months off. You have two key rotation players who aren't there. And you're trying to integrate at least two more rotation guys in Markieff Morris and Deion Waiters, with J.R. Smith maybe on the fringe. I thought that Frank not playing Deion in the last game was somewhat telling, that he was considering other options at those guard positions. Deion's been good, but not great. I don't know. I think it's problematic that the Lakers are still experimenting at this point, because this was a situation where you need to get settled and back into gear as quickly as possible. And it doesn't really feel like they've done that. And Sam, you were around the Lakers in Dwight's first stint, and this is not a perfect comparison, but I keep thinking about the preseason that year when the Lakers went 0-8 And they came into the year with huge title expectations. It was Dwight and Kobe and Steve Nash, and everybody thought they were going to win 75 games. And they come out and they completely lay a brick in the entire preseason and lose all 8 games. And everybody's like, it's the preseason, it's Kobe, it's Dwight, it's fine, it's just the preseason. And you could totally excuse it away because, you know, you're playing 15 guys. But at some point, a team with Kobe, Steve Nash, and Dwight should just overwhelm you with talent and should win some of those, right? And again, it's not the same thing.
To be fair, I don't think was Dwight. Sorry to cut you off.
Was he out then?
He was out, I believe.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough. But regardless, yeah. I mean, you saw kind of the foundation of like there's something wrong here. And I wonder if we will ultimately look back at these 8 seeding games of this Lakers team and say we should have paid closer attention to the problems that we saw. Like the writing was sort of on the wall.
Sure,
I don't know that it's going to be as cataclysmic as what we saw from that 2012 team. I doubt it would be, but it is. Like, it goes back to what Kyle said about kind of believing what you're seeing.
I actually have an interesting thought. I mean, and this is just sort of an idle thought, Sam. You would know more than I do, but I think of LeBron's last Cleveland year when it was like, all right, we're going to make a bunch of trades. We're going to put some new guys around him, and like I think the total substance of those trades were sort of whatever, like, but it kind of just shifted up the locker room, and the Cleveland didn't look incredibly great when going in the playoffs, but then LeBron was just LeBron and they won some series.
They almost lost in the series. First round.
Yeah. But this is what I think the Lakers are. Like, I think they're going to have some tough series, but if LeBron is playing up to his capability and if a few of those guys can hit threes, then they might tough it out. I don't think they're going to be what they were at the end of March. I really just don't. But I think the talent level is there. And if Anthony Davis kind of figures out consistency, then they'll get there. But that's sort of the comparison I've been making in my mind, that might be more like that team.
To that point, and LeBron being who he's going to be in the playoffs, and I do want to pivot to some of the lifestyle stuff with both you guys covering this in and out of the bubble. Bill, with your Northwest roots and all eyes on the Blazers right now and that prospect of that first-round matchup, you know, is this us getting ahead of ourselves media-wise and seeing something that isn't totally there, or is this a very legitimate, challenging series for the Lakers if that is ultimately who's there?
I don't think there's any question that it's the most challenging potential matchup. I mean, the other teams that are in that position, you have Memphis, a team that's without Jaren Jackson going forward and is really only still in it because they had the lead coming into the bubble. And San Antonio. And San Antonio is a young team, a disciplined Popovich coach team. But again, the Lakers will have far and away the 2 most talented players on the floor. I don't see that being much of a contest. And when you get to Portland, you have certainly a first team All-NBA guard in Damian Lillard. You have maybe a borderline All-Star caliber guard in CJ McCollum, a guy who could be that All-Star guard, and it may be a different situation. Nurkic, who looks like an All-Star so far in the bubble. And then just a lot of really capable role players. Gary Trent has had a breakout in the bubble. Zach Collins is a really good fit for what they do. Hassan Whiteside, problematic player, but comes in and gives you that additional
coming off the bench, though. I mean, that's
exactly know, comes in
yeah,
and can,
that's
and
huge.
Can, and you ha- so you can have, you know,
a not seven, relying on Hassan too much is the
right.
perfect role.
And it, having a 7-footer on the floor at all times is something that very few teams can do. The Lakers can do it, and you lose that advantage when you're going up against a team like Portland. And Portland's definitely one of the teams I was looking at when you say, okay, Lakers have 2 of the 3 best players on the floor, maybe the 2 best players, depending on, you know, how you feel about Damian Lillard, but probably the 2 best players, LeBron and AD, then Damian, and then CJ, then Nurkic. When's the next Laker on that list? And listen, I would still take the 2 best players. I want the 2 best players on my team, and we'll figure out the rest of it. But that does make them, to me, more threatening. Now, I don't think Portland has a great matchup for LeBron. I don't know how they're really going to defend him. And that is going to be obviously
the thought bubble over Kyle's head says they can't. That's what I read.
It says stay mellow,
Kyle.
Baby.
I mean, listen, LeBron has
skinny
never been,
mellow against LeBron. That's the only scenario where skinny
let's
mellow
go.
Is not going to help.
LeBron has never been happier to see Carmelo Anthony back in the NBA than when he sees that's who's guarding him the first round.
By the way, this is not the Blazers pod, but I got to stop and say, my God, I love Damian Lillard doing what he did last night. 51 points on Philly after everything with Paul George and Pat Beverly. Dame is a real one, man, and he's been that way since he was back at Weber State in your guys' old neck of the woods in your Utah coverage days. And then from there, what the hell else was I going to shout out? I don't know. Dame's awesome. That was fun to watch, and I love how you know you're under your peers' skins, so to speak, when they're chirping like they are. Pat is one thing. Paul George doesn't talk like that typically, and I loved, as an aside, Draymond Green on TNT. You know, Draymond, I thought, made a great point, which is, I mean, I was there the day Paul George broke his leg in Vegas, and I have as much sympathy for that as anybody, and it was incredibly excruciating to watch. But then Paul brings that into the conversation as if to say, you know, everything I've been through. So, and Dame just shut everybody up, and I thought that was a lot of fun to watch, and I'm here for the first round match.
Okay, again, as your bubble correspondent today,
yes.
I could not freaking believe that Paul George did the bye-bye with, like, I know Pat Bev is Pat Bev, right? Like,
right.
He's an insane competitor and does whatever he does. I could not believe Paul George did the bye-bye wave to Damian Lillard as the freaking Clippers
seeding game
bench.
Number four.
Like, it wasn't him like putting Damian, like, Damian Lillard did the bye-bye wave in an actual playoff series where he hit the game-winning shot over Paul George from a million feet away. And Paul George proceeded, is on the bench as his bench beats these guys doing the bye-bye wave. Are you kidding me?
And let me remind the listeners, because I don't know that folks slow down to consider the ripple effect from there. He legitimately relocated Paul George and Russell Westbrook in that playoff series. That
he
team
ended
was
that
broken
franchise.
Up. Yeah. Russ had ended up, you know, because of what Paul chose to do and to get on board with Kawhi Leonard, go to the Clippers. I mean, I can't think of a shot possibly, I don't want to be over the top. It was one of the most impactful NBA shots of all time. Far more impactful than anything that Clippers bench did. And again, seeding game number four, or whatever it was.
Yeah, as Landry Shamet is beating the Blazers, Paul George from the bench is like, oh, like,
well, and
he
even Pat,
that up. He did it.
I'm not about to sit here and say, you know, Blazers in the finals, but even Pat tweeting at Damian saying, well, you're going home this year. Like, I don't know. Like, we'll see.
I just want to say that Damian Lillard does not seem like a player you want to make mad in general.
100%.
Like if Damian Lillard is now not thinking about beating the Lakers, he's thinking about quickly dispatching the Lakers and whatever comes next so he can get to the Clippers and mess them up now. Like,
they'd be, would it be the other side of the bracket? Am I correct?
The Clippers,
so they got to really make a run.
That's official. They're at two. They can't move out of two at this point.
I don't think it's official yet, but I think even the three would. I'm terrible at bracket.
Yeah, no, they would be on the other side. The best seed that Portland could get is the eight, and the Clippers are going to be either two or three, so they would be on the other.
So they would have to make a hell of a run to actually see each other, but still.
I mean, who knows? I mean, and that's not a commentary on the Lakers. It's just a commentary on the bubble. I mean, who really knows?
And I've said this from the beginning, and we will start seeing in a couple of weeks, but this whole situation is ripe for chaos. And that doesn't mean the Lakers are going to lose in the first round, but it means that maybe you just don't know. You don't know who's going to pull upsets. And these matchups are insane. Dallas, Clippers, Houston, and OKC potentially, and Jazz, Nuggets. I mean, good luck picking those. Good luck picking all four of those correctly.
And by the way, like, the other thing that you're going to see is, like, Marcus Morris has a baby on the way in September. Is he going to miss the Western Conference Finals for this baby? Like, and I'm not saying that's a bad decision, but that's the kind of, no, but
that's not very personal about the baby, Kyle. What did this baby do to you?
No, I'm just saying that's literally the kind of decisions that will affect these series in the bubble. Like, or somebody close. No, I'm being serious. Like,
no, we're just having fun.
These people die. I mean, Trez has been gone for however long, like three.
By the way, he just tweeted that he's back. Yeah,
but
I don't know,
like,
if you guys saw that.
Yeah, he was in. He's in Disney now. But, like, Doc hasn't been saying anything about it. Like, those are the things that actually could decide playoff series. So we have no idea.
Before I get you both out of here, I got to fulfill my own promise. And Kyle, we got to talk about the fishing excursion. Now, listen, I can sense to make sure that your bosses who might be listening know Kyle is grinding. He's working his ass off and nobody is questioning that. But the recreation stuff, because I'm going to be there, as you know, I've been incessantly inquiring with people on the inside of the bubble about what's available and what we can do. So when I saw the fishing, I was excited. And now I'm not as proud as I was before. I fished twice in the last 2 weeks and caught 4 fish total, I think, and I was feeling pretty good about myself. And then I see these pictures from the bubble angling experience where, I mean, are we all hitting our limits here? These are some big boys that you're catching, and how has that been?
Yeah, you should feel pressured, because Tanya Ganguly caught more fish than you in 2 hours than you caught in the last 2 weeks. So,
what are you all throwing? What's she catching them on?
It's we had some minnows. We went out to the Grand Floridian. Get a special bus, all three of us. A huge bus takes us out to the Grand Floridian, and we had a guide. His name was David. He was great. He put everything on the line. I threw my first cast and threw my hook directly into a fishing net in another boat. So it was great. There was a lot going on. I still caught 3 fish. Yeah, but I would say the thing about the fun in the bubble is, like, sort of, not to take away from what I was saying earlier, it's a grind. But then, like, the other thing is, like, when you have those moments, you're like, you know what I'm going to do? Like, I'm going to seize those moments and really, like, get out there. We're going to go fishing, damn it. And Rachel was sort of the ringleader of this, because a week ago we went on this
Rachel Nichols,
boat.
ESPN.
Yeah, Rachel Nichols from ESPN's The Jump. And a week ago we went on a pontoon boat, and I don't think any of us expected anything out of it. And it was like at 9:30, and we're all bedraggled because we're all West Coast people. So Tanya, Rachel, and I get on the bus, and we're sort of like, okay, I guess we're doing this. And then they let us get in the boat, and they're like, all right, enjoy. And we didn't realize we were going to be able to drive our own boat in this lake at the yacht club.
Islet.
So we were like hanging out for an hour on the boat, playing music and like having the time of our lives, because the rest of the time we have to stay in like a tiny portion of the Coronado Springs Resort. Or on the ESPN Wide World Sports.
And no swimming, because we have alligators in the water, correct? Am I right about that?
Yeah, no swimming off of the boat, for sure. And that's a real thing, because people have gotten attacked in the Disney area. I think there is that thing of people work so hard here. It's like when you get those moments of levity, it's like, oh, I really need to take advantage. So after we did the pontoon boat last week, Rachel became the ringleader with Disney VIP services, and she was CCing us on all these emails like, hi, we would like to go fishing on Sunday, thank you very much. And then like, oh, well, we haven't made the fishing schedule. And she's like CCing us on everything. He's like, well, please tell us when you do, because we would very much like to go fishing. So
I love
she was pushing that, she was driving it. But that's all how right. You see.
Yeah, Bill's hands up again. Bill said he has to leave. What do you have as a parting shot?
So now that you've been fishing, does that mean you guys are honorary Disney cast members?
Wow. It would not be an Orem.
Hey, great note to leave, Bill. Great. Yeah.
That was better than your pedicure talk. All right, guys. I appreciate you. Kyle, hang in there, man. You're doing really good stuff. By the way, if you haven't read it yet, read Kyle's piece on the behind-the-scenes look at the Lakers. Equipment managers and even Rob Pelinka grabbing a mop, and the idea that all these teams that can only have 35 people it's kind of an all hands on deck approach. That was a really good read. Bill, always pumping out really good reads. What? Go ahead, Bill.
All hands on deck. Another yes. Reference.
Yes. All right, gents. Be good. Thank you. Talk to you.
Hey, fellas. Are you prepared to unveil your summer bod? The beaches are opening, the sun is shining. And it's time to get Manscaped. Manscaped is here to ensure your post-quarantine body is ready for the wild. Manscaped is dedicated to helping you level up your full body grooming game. They have forever changed the grooming game with their Perfect Package 3.0. That includes an Essential Lawnmower 3.0 that's waterproof, cordless, body trimmer, and a ton of other liquid formulations to round out your manscaping routine. I own the Lawnmower 3.0, and it is a great product. I think it has a light on it. offer accurate grooming, and it's just a really well-made product. It is great. And inside the perfect package, you'll find Manscaped's Crop Preserver and anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer, because we know how painful chafing can be when you're wearing your bathing suit all day long. So make sure you use that. And also make sure that you get 20% off and free shipping with the code THEATHLETIC at manscaped.com. Do yourself a favor and always use the right tools for the job. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code THEATHLETIC at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with the free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code THEATHLETIC. And for a limited time, subscribers get not one, but two free gifts. The Shed Travel Bag, which is a $39 value, and the patented high-performance anti-chafing Manscaped Boxer Briefs. They're good. I've got some, and I wear them, and they're wonderful. So make sure that you get some, too, and go to manscaped.com today and use the code THEATHLETIC.
All right, so that was the conversation with Kyle and Bill. Thank you to those two friends of mine for spending the time. That was fun. Now to the conversation with Joe Ingles, Utah Jazz forward, with a quick disclaimer. The audio is not going to be quite as great as it normally is, only because this conversation originally was not intended for the podcast. It was going to be for a written story only, but Joe was so good, so interesting, and so honest, I wanted to share it with the listeners. And so if you could get past that part, and it's not bad at all, you should enjoy it.
On just the life side, you know, how would you rate this experience? You know, what is it in reality versus what you thought might be going in?
There's two things to that. Like, it's very similar to what I thought, in terms of, like, from what I'd heard and talked about, I was like, it's going to be like a national team. It's like a national team with a lot more money, obviously, than what the Australian Basketball Australia has. But it's like a national team on steroids, like a World Cup, whatever tournament. Obviously, with staying in, so like I could walk downstairs in a minute to go to a meeting, and I'll see three guys from Milwaukee, two guys. Like, you just see everybody walking around, obviously, because there's eight of us at our hotel.
Why you got to mention Milwaukee? Are you trying to recruit Giannis? Is that what's happening here?
Hey, if he wants to come to Utah, if he comes, it means I'll probably be out. So, I actually only said that because I saw him this morning when I was walking back from the breakfast room. He's the only player I've seen today.
Tough to miss, too.
But he's ducking under every bloody door thing. But it's like that. It's like, you have a team room where you eat your meals, so it's on the main level, so you've got to kind of walk down to your team room, which obviously for me, it's very normal because I've done this before for 10 years with the national team. So all of that part is very kind of, for me, is kind of normal, what I expected. The flip side of that, like it's definitely harder than I assumed it was going to be. It's not on the same level as story, but it's like a similar thing. Like when Renee had the twins, weeks and weeks before, we were meeting with all these different people because I had to leave for the Olympics, and I end up leaving a week later for the Olympics because I was not obviously going to miss the birth of the twins. And the whole time leading up to it, we're meeting with all these different people, mental health people, everyone, to try and figure out the best way that I'll be okay to leave. And the whole time leading up to it, like, I'll be fine. Like, I'm not an emotional person. Like, I'll be fine. I know they're in really good hands with Renee, regardless if I'm there or not. She's probably better off with me not there anyway. Getting a lot more done. And I was like, yeah, totally fine. I'm fine. I'll be fine. And I walked out the door and I left from the hospital. So we had them on, like, I left like 36 hours after they were born. So I met, like, got to meet them, hung out with them. And I left from the hospital to go to the airport to meet the team 10 days later already. And I walked out the hospital door, like her bedroom door that we were in or whatever. And I walked out and I was like, this doesn't feel right at all. Like, this just isn't, And it's obviously a different level because I can like sit on the phone now to the kids and talk on FaceTime and they like tell me what they're doing. And Millie just went to the shops and bought a fish. Like she's always excited because she's got this stupid little pink fish now. But it was just different. You just think like, oh, it'll be okay. And then same time, this like, I'll be all right. But then you get away and obviously it's been, whatever you said, 4 or 5 weeks. And I'm just like, this isn't the life. It's the lifestyle that I typically live and not the lifestyle that I like. Like I want to be with my family. I want to pick up my kids from school. Like that's my favorite part of the day is like dropping Miller at school or Jacob and then picking them up after practice or whatever and seeing them run out to the car or run and give you a hug when they run out the door. Like that's the important stuff to me. Like basketball is great and it's whatever, but it's been, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. Obviously there's a part of it that I know is the business side and it has to be done. And obviously I wanted to come with my team and support my team and play and do all that, but it's still, I mean, it'll never make it easier. As much as I love basketball to leave like everyone's families. I'm sure I'm not the only one in this case too.
Sure. Yeah. I wonder, you know, not even just you, everybody there, and I've actually asked your coach this a few weeks ago, like, could you see some of the stuff you're talking about having any ripple effect on guys' ability to focus and compete later in the process when it comes to the tug of kind of the normalcy being so far away and then the length of time that you end up spending 100%. Inside the bubble?
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think people would, like, it's like what I was saying about leaving the kids, like, leading up to it the whole time. I was like, I'll be fine. Like, played the worst tournament with Australia that I've ever played with. Probably could have won a medal if I had done, like, something, like, anything. We probably would have won a medal. But I don't think guys, and that's the thing, which is so obviously cool, too, about, like, DeMar and Kevin Love being so open about their mental health and stuff is, like, it's always been this like story or whatever that it's like not cool to talk about your feelings or if you're upset or if you're lonely or and I don't think guys will like realize it. Like I'm not a big feelings talker. Like I'll say some stuff to Renee and that she knows. Like I keep a lot to myself and I think a lot of guys like that. They try and deal with it themselves without asking for help or whatever. But I think there'll be a point where guys are like we'll need to reach out to people, whether it's their mom or their brother or sister or wife, or obviously every team's got a mental health advisor or person on their staff or whatever now. So,
right.
But I think it will. I think it'll take, cause you're stuck. Like I said this the other day to someone, like, oh, they were asking about the room. And I said, the room is like, it's fine. Like we're in a 5-star hotel, whatever it is. Like I've got a bed and a couch but it's still like a tiny ass little room compared to like your house or a hotel for a night. And that's why I was saying like before with me, like I come back after the game and I just like, I love my teammates, but I don't want to hang around them 24/7 either.
Right.
So you come back to your room and I'm like sitting here like, man, I just played like shit and I had 5 turnovers and I missed like, and you overplay it. And I think, guys' willingness to like adapt to the situation and be comfortable like being uncomfortable to a certain aspect is pretty important. And then like adapting to we were talking about as a team, like adapting to like no fans and the referees can hear. Like I got a technical yesterday. I probably wouldn't have got it if there was 20,000 Jazz fans in there, but there's no one in there and he heard what I said and it wasn't. I mean, I probably deserved it anyway because I overreacted, but like. There's going to be situations like if you can adapt, if everyone can, the teams that can adapt to this the most and the food's not probably what everyone's like typically used to at home, or you can't go out to a restaurant. I mean, you can go to a restaurant, but it's like on the campus, like you can't leave. And
no chicken wings for you, Joe?
No, I'm not a chicken wing guy. Adapting to the situation because you can. I mean, I did. I tweeted a picture of the food the first, like, and I was just, like, grumpy and miserable. And that was probably on top of, like, not only the food actually wasn't very good that first few days, but then also I'm, like, stuck in my room for the first 48 hours quarantining and I'm missing the kids. And so you just get everything builds up and all that. So I think I think it'd be interesting, but I think guys need to, like, really need to think about that mental health side of it, because it can get lonely and boring and, like, whatever it is.
Sure. Give me the story again real quick about the X factor and the key to your game yesterday. What did you end up watching to get your mind off hoops?
I don't even want to tell you what I watched. No, it was just like, it was Renee's idea, which majority of, like, 99.9% of things I do is Renee's idea. But it was just like to get away from it for that morning. But obviously having an earlier game helps because you're not sitting around all day. So I just got up and went down to breakfast, came back up, and Renee was like, just watch like a comedy or or go for a walk. And I didn't want to go for a walk because it's hot as hell and, like, I don't want to walk on the day of the game that far or whatever. So I was like searching on Netflix, and I ended up, I do love like an action-y jail, prison, like that kind of stuff. And I came across like the world's hardest prisons or toughest prisons like that.
Yeah.
And it's a guy who actually served in prison for a crime he didn't commit, and he got out after 12 years, and then now he just flies around the world going to like the craziest places and spends like a week in jail with murderers, rapists, like all kinds of things. So I literally just made a coffee and I sat in my room and like got off my bed and sat on the couch and started watching the show, and then had a shower and got ready for the game. And then I just put a podcast in, which was, it's called Howie Games, Howie. It's a guy from Australia that just interviews all kinds of people. But like me and Renee have done it before. But I obviously want to listen to a basketball, and I just scrolled through and I found Daniel Ricciardo, who's our Formula One driver.
Okay.
Listen to that, and I don't listen to music pregame or anything, but I listened to that like all the way up to like probably the last kind of possible minute that I could, until I had to like go and stretch and lift and get ready for the game. And like I'm never going to sit here and say like if I just do that every time I'm going to play and have 25 points, because that's not the case. But I think at the time and the kind of the mood I was in, with just feeling like I was overthinking everything and I was second guessing myself a little bit because I was not playing well, and kind of probably a pretty normal feeling for when you're not playing well and you're stuck in a bubble. So I just took my mind away from it. And we're probably lucky we play walk tomorrow as well, so I'll probably do a similar thing. But just to get my mind, like, and once I get to the arena and we start watching the film pregame and warming up, like, I can start to focus on, like, these are the things I'm doing. I'm guarding this guy, A, B, C, and D. But just leading up to it, just trying to take my mind away from it, because you just can't – right now, like, you can't get away from it in here, which is, like we were saying before, like, is one of the things I think will be the toughest part.
What about – I mean, as an offshoot of that, you know, you mentioned – seeing your teammates all the time, you go down the hallway, you see somebody, you see other guys. And yesterday, I forget where I saw this, but somebody had raised the possibility of, like, the longer that everybody is there, the more intense that the competition gets.
I saw that.
Yeah, and you're like the perfect guy to ask, because honestly, you're chippy as hell on the court. like, you're the type of dude that if you said something to me,
for sure,
in the action, then if I caught you in the breakfast room, maybe I got something to say back. You know, like, what's your read on that unique component?
Yeah, I think I've been, like, again, with the national team, it's you kind of get, it's like you're thankful for the national team now, because I'm like, I've been in a lot of these situations, like, already. Like, I've been around guys that I've got into it with or whatever it is. Yeah, I think it'd be interesting, especially once you get deeper and deeper in this, and like, I think they've said, like, once it gets down to like eight teams, six teams, whatever, they're all going to come to this hotel that we're at. So like, obviously teams will be shipped out, they'll clean it all up. And I think our hotel has been like classified as the nicest or the best or whatever it is.
Yep.
So I think they're all coming to the same. And obviously, like, when you get that deep into it, like, you're playing in what, conference finals, the finals, like, once you get to the finals, there's going to be two teams here. Like, it's going to be inevitable that you bump into people. And, like, you at that point, too, like, everyone's going for the win, and they're going to do whatever they physically and mentally have to do to obviously get a to win a championship. So, I'm never one to, like, get into it on court with someone and take it off court and be, like, I'm not going to fight. Like, let's be honest, no one's really fighting anyone in the NBA or anything like that. But, like, once you're off the court and if I see you, like, I'm going to be cool with you. Like, I don't have any problems. Like, I think that's where a lot of it gets, like, misconstrued in the NBA. It's like, we're all trying to win. Like,
sure.
But no one, I mean.
No, but isn't it, it's like what you said with your teammates, like that you're used to getting a break from them, and you're certainly getting
so we might play like break. Whoever he is, we might play like Patty Mills. Not that I would get into it with him, but like if I got into it with him in the regular season, I'm not going to see him until like a month later when we play him again. So you get away from it, and even if you did hate each other by that month over, it's like, oh, whatever. Like,
yeah,
right. Which I still like would be confident to say, like, I don't think people are going to like come back on the bus from a game and like be waiting at the valet parking to fight the other person when they get off the bus. But it'd be interesting because you just don't. A lot of guys, apart from the international guys, have not been in a situation like this.
Right.
So it's a lot of firsts for everyone. So, yeah, like I said, I have no issue with people off court. Like, I'll say hi to whoever and talk to whoever. I don't have any problem talking to people.
Will that cross your mind when you're on the court? Like, I wonder if you got something to say. And this is just human nature. Like, is there any chance you kind of change the way you move on the court? Because you're sitting there thinking, I might be sharing the elevator with this dude in 90 minutes here?
That's probably the most, like, that would probably be the funniest situation is, like, you've just got into it with someone and you get in the elevator to go to lunch or whatever, and he's the only person in the elevator.
Exactly.
Like, that would be, to me, that would be, like, it's not funny because who knows what would happen if people were actually genuinely, like, really hated each other. But,
right.
I'm going to play the same way that I've always played. Like, I'm going to compete my ass off and I'm going to get into people and do whatever I have to do to win, obviously within the rules, because I'm not going to be an idiot and like try and hurt someone or anything like that. But I'm going to play the same way. Like, if people don't like that, I have, like, it's the same, like Pat Beverley is an example to me. Like, I love the way he plays. He doesn't care who he's guarding. He, like, being whatever he is, 6 foot, he doesn't care if he's guarding a 7 footer or a 5 foot 5 guy. Like, he's going to play the same way.
Right.
And I've known Pat for a long time, but, like, I've got into it with Pat a million times because it's like, dude, like, go away. Like, leave me alone. Stop touching me. Stop. Then you get off the court. It's like, nothing personal. Like, he's trying to win just as much as I'm trying to win.
Right.
So I wouldn't imagine there to be, like, issues or anything, but in saying that, you never know because we haven't really been in this situation.
Sure. Give me your quick 2 cents on your squad. Rudy and Donovan are playing well together. The pictures get put on social media of them playing ping pong. And so here you are, like, you've got this kind of, you know, I don't know what you call it, like, you've got this caretaker role within that locker room.
Grandpa.
Where, like, yeah, like, making sure everybody's getting along. So that's been a story that everybody's been watching since March 11th. You know, what's kind of your updated feeling about the read of that role?
No, I mean, I said it at the time. Someone actually asked me about it. Who was it the other day? Rachel Nichols asked me about it the other day, post-game or whatever. Like, I'll forever say the same thing, I think, and a part of that is because I said it to her, like, I'm in the group text. I'm in text with them. I'm in the team room with them. Like, I think at the time of what happened and what went on and all that, like, there was literally nothing, apart from the coronavirus, there was nothing else going on. Like, there was a lot of people trying to get stories. I understand that. Like, people have jobs to do. You guys have to, like, I don't agree with everything the media writes all the time, but I understand that, like, I've got a job too. Like, you guys are trying to feed your families and do the same thing we're trying to do. Like, everyone's, there's some people that I think go about it the wrong way, which I just don't talk to. But I just think it got blown way more out of proportion than it ever would have if that never happened or whatever, or if this, there was a vaccine or whatever could be happened and we just played the next game and kept rolling on with the season kind of after finding out. I think it would have just been, like, it would have just been like, oh yeah, they were mad at each other for a second, and it's because there was so much time. And usually if you're, like, I've got into it with Rudy, I couldn't tell you how many times in the last 6 years. Like, we get into it over all different stuff. I'm like, be a better screener. And he's like, passing ball. And I'm like, no, screen for me. I'm going to try, if they send me right, I'm trying to cut back. Like, we've told you this a million times. Like, and then the next day you see each other and you're like, yeah, cool. Like, there's no issue. It's just that you're both trying to win and you're both trying to, I'm trying to help him. Like, I want him to be as good as he can be, and he wants to help me. Like, shit, a big reason I am who I am and got paid the money I got. Like, he's helped me big time. Like, there's no question in that. And I think, like I said, I just think it got so blown out of proportion because of nothing going on. I honestly think if we went on about the season as per normal after that, I think it would have just been like another little story in the NBA that would have died away, because there was nothing it's like nothing's happened to me here. It's like they're totally fine. It is funny that that pitcher got out or whatever on playing ping pong, because like we've got a ping pong table in our team room because we've got a lot of enjoyable good ping pong players, so we have tournaments all the time and play against each other and talk shit, and everyone's trying to be the top ranked guy at the time and whatever. So I honestly,
who's the ping pong king?
I put myself high up there. Rudy did think he was really good, but I'm not sold on it. Donovan's like the type of player that like doesn't do anything special, but he just hits it back every time. So he like waits for you to make a mistake, which sometimes you get like frustrating. You just want to belt it at him. So you just try and hit winners every time. But we've got a lot of like, I wouldn't say we've got like two all-stars and the rest of us are role players. We've got like a really good overall team of, like, if we were playing teams against teams, our team would win. We'd be pretty confident.
All right. The two all-stars being you and Rudy or Donovan?
Me and Royce. You said it.
You and Royce.
22, never or whatever. Why aren't they paying me enough?
There's the headline. Joe Ingles wants more cash.
No, don't do that. I'll be in big trouble. I've got enough coming in.
The last quick thought on that Rudy front that you got me thinking of, like, here's, not to get into armchair psychology, but the more I've learned about that situation, it makes me wonder if, do you think there was a time, so post March 11, I remember hearing some stuff about how you guys would get on Zoom calls as a team, and for a stretch, like, Rudy was not taking part in some of those social media, you know, team activities that were going on. And then, so later, you know, he did an interview last week, I don't know if you saw it, with the Washington Post. It was pretty good, and he was open about where his head was at that time. And, you know, and so my takeaway was...
Is that the one where he was saying about never being super close with his family and with teammates and...
Yeah, and it just, I got a sense, like, I guess the feeling I got was like, you know, he probably really just pulled away from almost everybody during that time. And I could see within the team dynamic why some people might perceive that as, you know, maybe they hyper-focused on the Donovan thing, and it's like,
for sure,
okay, you know, and maybe they just read it wrong. I mean, do you have any more clarity as you kind of look back at
where the craziest part is? Like, the craziest part of, like, all of these, like, oh, he wasn't on this call or wasn't on that. Like, we all missed a call at some point. Like, I missed a couple of the calls because, like, I was with the kids or we were going to the park, and it just didn't, like, it was, they were never, a lot of, there was a few that were mandatory, obviously, with, like, stuff that was going on with potentially coming here and rules and regulations and what we needed to do and, like, whatever it was.
Right.
Some league calls, some jazz calls, like, but shit, the first 3 weeks, you were probably the only person I spoke to on the phone. Like that podcast was like, I didn't want to talk to my teammates. I didn't want to see them. Like my only, and I said that on the podcast, like my only focus at that time was my family. Like,
right.
Yeah, I hope Rudy and Donovan were healthy and like feeling all right or whatever. Like, but I wasn't texting them every day. Like it was just, it wasn't. And I think a lot of guys went into that mode. Like Rudy was positive and had, I think he had like a few symptoms or whatever. Donovan didn't really have any, but like you're still waking up. I think Donovan's thing yesterday or whatever day it was, the players' tribune thing, like he's laying in bed, like thinking about all this stuff every day because he's stuck in this room. Like your mind just goes into like overdrive. And for me, it was like my family. But I think with Rudy keeps his cards close to him until you get to know him and you really not put effort in to get to know him. Like with me, he's pretty open. Like I feel like I could talk to him or ask him anything. But my first couple of years, it wasn't like that. Like, but I've known him I've known him the longest on our team, apart from like coaching that, like it's 6-7 years or whatever. So I've got to know him. I know how to push his buttons to get him going. I know what to say to him to make him scream better for him. Like I know how to keep him. Like you get to know people over time. And I think at that time, which no kind of hate or anger towards anyone, but everyone was worried about themselves at that point. It was like a bit of a selfish moment. Like, have I got it? Like, I'll sit next to me. There's a few of us. We'll sit with Donovan all night that night. Like, I was sitting a seat away from him for 6 hours in the locker room and stuff. Like, so you're thinking like, oh, am I going to be positive in 2 or 3 days? Am I going to be positive in a week? Like, especially at the time, not knowing obviously anywhere near what we do now about it. I think everyone kind of went into like that, like selfish mode is probably kind of the best way to, but like you're worried about, and like I said, like mine was purely like the nerve of if I've got it, like not being near the kids. Like I didn't kiss the kids for the first week because I didn't want to like have any chance of passing it to them. If I was, especially now that we know like it takes kind of 5 to 7 days or whatever for symptoms to potentially show or whatever. I think it's like 5 days they said that for it to like show up on a test or whatever. So back then we didn't probably know all that, but I don't want to risk giving it to my kids. So like I didn't speak to the team for like, put that in the headline, like Joe Ingles hates teammates. Like it was, it's not that I don't like my teammates, but everyone was so worried about, and I think rightfully so, like everyone was more worried about themselves or who's at home with them. Like we got guys that have kids, wives, grandparents live with them. Maybe like Donovan went to his back home to where his mum, like his mum's house, like he's with his mum. She's older. Like who knows? Like there's all these things that everyone kind of is worrying about. And so the first few weeks, like everything was super quiet. Like I didn't talk to anyone. I think the first person that I spoke to was George or someone. It was just like, you guys all good. And that was like 2 or 3 weeks down the track. Like it wasn't, I was in no rush to talk to him. It's not because I don't like anyone, but I think respectfully, everyone was doing the right thing by themselves and by their families or loved ones or whoever they were with.
Right. Good stuff, man. Super fast. Best experience out there so far, worst experience in terms of whether it's off-court level stuff or you can the basketball's part of it.
The best probably just that, like, as I was saying before, like you get stuck in your room a lot, but the best is being able to like go and play golf. Like we haven't, obviously not since you start playing, but those first couple of weeks when you're just practicing and stuff, like we would, a few of us one day went out, me, Jordan, Donovan and Royce and a couple of the coaches went out and like played golf, and I'm not a golfer, but I like drove the cart around and had a beer and like just, it's obviously nice weather. And those first few days after quarantine was like, you kind of finding your feet a little bit. So that's been the cool part of like I said, the NBA has done a hell of a job to put this together. Like I was sure even once we got here, it was going to be shut down within a week or two from some positive tests or whatever. But I think some of our guys last night after the game went bowling, like stuff like that. Like they've done a hell of a job to do stuff like that. The worst experience is 100% was that the first 48 hours, which you're going to have to experience soon. So I don't envy that at all.
Dude,
but like
mine's seven days.
Yeah, that's even worse because we were 48 hours, but like you can, like you're sitting in your room all day. You get a knock on the door, like whether three times a day, they drop a bag out of the thing, and that's a picture I tweeted of the food. I was like, this is just like, if this is right. going to be the way it is, which at that time we didn't know what the plan of like, there's going to be obviously more going on. And now I think half or majority of the team's chefs are here cooking off site and they deliver the food. So we get to eat pretty similar to how we do with our chef in Utah because he's here cooking. So, right. But those first 4 days, just being stuck in the room and I only just discovered the other day when I was doing we did a Ingles Insight podcast the other day of just like inside the bubble and how it's been. And I didn't even kind of realize, but I was like, it would have been a really good time to like unpack and do my, and I was like, Renee's like, I hadn't even unpacked anything yet. Like I was still living in my suitcase. And so I 4 weeks in took all my clothes out and hung them up. And it was just a real weird time. Cause it's like, you're in a hotel room, which like normally if we go on the road trip and we're in Detroit or something, like some city I don't really want to do anything or I don't know anyone, like I'm going to stay in my room for like all of that afternoon, that night, and then the morning until shoot around. But because I know I've got the option to leave, you don't think about it. Because we knew we were like locked in our fucking rooms.
Right.
And the only fresh air we got was like opening the door to get the disgusting food that was the first 48 hours. Right. That was definitely the worst.
Gotcha. All right. But thank you, man.
In saying that too, it's been great since that. Like I said, NBA has done
it. It seems like it.
Put it together.
You'll find this kind of fun. I don't know if you noticed. So one of the Instagram pictures I put up the other day was, and this had me excited because I went fishing with our sons. And so I put a picture up of the fish and then I tagged the NBA. Because the thing is, like, the media so far does not have anywhere near the recreational opportunities that you guys have. And I get it.
Yeah.
Like, you guys are the players. But, like, I have admittedly, you know, I've got some juice, hopefully, with the league office, and I've been pushing them, like, all right, you got to give us something. So I tagged the NBA on the fishing thing, and sure enough, I got a note from the PR office that was like, we're ready for you. You know, we got poles for rent. You know, you can fish out here. And I was fired up. I was like, all right, that sounds good.
But it is, too. But, it's like the same for you as it is for us. Like, yeah, your job's different. Like, you're not running out on the court. And you can sit in your room and write up a story or do a podcast from you, like, whatever it is. But you also don't want to just be stuck in your room the whole time. Like,
right.
Your brain needs to be kicking over as well. Same as like the referees. Like referees need to be.
Yeah.
I don't want to get in trouble for like talking about the referees, but there was in those first few games we were all like adjusting to being back playing. Like I'd be like, man, you couldn't call that, and they're like, man, we're in the same boat as you. Like everyone's adjusting to being back and the speed.
Well, the numbers are super up. I don't know if you've heard that.
Oh, really?
In terms of they've been that whistle's been blowing like crazy.
Yeah, I got a technical, so I know they're fucking blowing it.
you're right that everody's in the same boat to a degree. Honestly,
doesn't matter what you're doing here. Like, there has to be some outlet for everyone in terms of like, you just can't like expect like even the workers like the security or the NBA like day to day like admin or like it can't just be like there has to be stuff that they
like the media buddies I have out there who I'm in touch with, the ones who are already there. Like, what's funny is I keep pinging them, asking them, like, hey, you know, can we golf? Can we fish? And because I'm not there yet, that's kind of my focus. I keep hearing back. They're like, yo, we're working 15-hour days, and we've never been this tired in our lives, you know. Like, part of that is what you're talking about.
Our jazz staff's the same thing. Like, oh, I thought I'd be able to, like, finish practice, and I'd be able to, like, go fishing or, like, watch Netflix or – but there's also a lot of shit, like, they're preparing, like, our guys are treating guys all day, especially because we can. Like, if I want to get a stretch, I just text one of that eyes and go and get some work done. Like, they're kind of, like, on call as well. And then, like, our every staff member that's here with us, like obviously bringing like 30 whatever people, like everyone's had to pick up extra. So like our strength coach or our physio, whoever might be here, like helping fill drink bottles, because there's only a certain amount of ball boys allowed. There's only a certain amount of like with the people we brought, or every team's had to bring. So it's different for everyone. Like everyone's got more on their plate than what they thought, because everyone's load for our, like for the teams has been picked up, because we haven't got as many staff as what we would normally travel with, or if we're at home, or if there was no coronavirus.
Right. Crazy stuff.